Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob, reading today from Cries from Among Us. It's a combination of about 94 posts that I had on a blog site, still do have. It's at criesfromamongus.com, that I've taken down and put into a book form that you can get at amazon.com. We're on, if you're following along, page 37, doing the post from May the 21st. It's called Nightmares in Beulah Land. The true church, as God sees it, is justified, it's glorified, it's known from before the foundation of the world. The cries that I'm going to introduce are meant to cause compassion, not judgment. I do not indict the true church of Jesus Christ, but the false teachings that come inside of it from time to time. Also, please recall that this reporter agrees with biblical truths wherever they are found in the Bible, but there is a growing list of non-biblical teachings and practices that distress me in some churches and their sponsored homes. They cause me grief. I must speak out. Pray with me that the cancers that are in our midst will be cut out. What I'm about to uncover before your eyes, and it won't be today, probably we'll get to it the next day or so, it could have happened in many places in our nation, even in individual families. I'll speak with some authority about the place that I'm calling Beulah Land. That's not its real name. But having researched the history of homes like Beulah Land, I'm confident now that that authority extends to covering a movement. It's a sad movement. Many of these things happened many years ago. That's true. Some of them recently. Some are ongoing. Strangely, though, an admission of guilt has never come forth from some of these places, except for some faint whispers of, oh, well, you know, we made some mistakes along the way. The ministries continue on, deaf to the cries of the wounded, assured that God is in their policies and that the rest of what they would call the so-called church, that's what they would call us, is anywhere from liberal to Antichrist. Ask them. So weep with me. The pain is real. I want to go to Psalm 31 where it says, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, for I am in trouble. My eye wastes away with grief. Yes, my soul and my body. For my life is spent with grief and my years with sighing. I hear the slander of many. Fear is on every side." That's from the Psalms. And it could have been the voice of many within those homes in the past or in the present crying out, "Oh God, God, my life is spent with grief." There's a response to that psalm, you might say, from Jesus himself in Matthew 28, where Jesus said, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, I will give you rest." And from Charles Spurgeon, who commented on Psalm 31 from his Treasury of David, I've quoted, "Many saints have had their greatest enlargement of soul when their affairs have been in the greatest straits. Their souls have been in a large room when their bodies have been lying in some narrow dungeon. Grace has been equal to every emergency. And more than this, grace has made the emergency an opportunity for displaying itself." How about Hebrews 13:3 that talks about remembering the prisoners? If prison is a place where you go when you've done bad things, or if prison is a place where you don't want to be, but you can't escape from it, or if prison is a place where bad things can happen to good people, as in the Christians in North Korea, then we've got to classify these teen homes, some of them, not all of them, got to classify them as prisons. That's why the scriptural injunction follows to be mindful of the prisoners as though bound with them. Now, I know that there have always been those who were relatively glad to be in a facility for reasons of their own. Now, there are people at the Cook County Jail, and I've visited them years past, but they're glad to be there. No one's going to accept them anywhere else. They don't know how to live anywhere else. Some of them have been in jail for so long. They've got friends there. They're being fed. Someone keeps them in line by harsh rules. They've forgotten how to live their own lives, for better or worse. If you saw Shawshank Redemption, many, many, many people have seen that. You know what I'm talking about there. No, I didn't just say that the residents, past or present, of these homes are like the inmates at Cook County Jail. Not at all. Some of them are. A number of them are totally content to be there and wondering why people could come against such a place. The testimonies that I will relate in my blog and in this book, and they're already out there if you want to see them. And the website that I gave you, I think on the second day, you can go to that website and see firsthand what these people have suffered. We're going to cover the amazing story much later of people who actually praise these holding cells for juveniles. For them, it was a step up. We'll talk about that. Now, some of these girls we would have called bad. And again, I say girls, but if you look at all the homes throughout the country, there are guys and girls. Parents arrested them in many cases, brought them by deception or force to a Christian facility, then abandoned them to whatever fate the home might have in store. They trusted God, and they trusted their pastor, and they trusted the leadership, that things were going to be better now, the leadership of the home. And as in many prisons, some escaped. Some were then returned. Others were able to prove abuse, and they stayed out for good. Am I making all this up? Am I trying to be dramatic? When you listen to the stories in the posts to come, you see if you agree that something is amiss in a facility that calls itself a home for the troubled, but has become a trouble of its own. If I've misspoken, show me where. Let's talk about accusing an elder. You know the passage, Christians that are listening to me, you know in 1 Timothy 4:19, an apostle wrote the letter to a member of his team, Timothy. We think of Pastor Timothy. Well, Timothy played the role of pastor for a while, but that was not his main job. He didn't build a little kingdom there in Ephesus. He was left there by the apostle on one of their journeys and told to put the church in order and then come and revisit him, and perhaps there'd be another assignment for him. He wasn't, quote, the pastor. Those two words are never used in the New Testament, the pastor. Anyway, another thing. Well, anyway, Paul assigns Timothy the job of putting the Ephesian church in order by ordaining a group of pastors or elders or bishops. All those three words are used interchangeably in the scripture. A group of them. He's going to train them, and he's going to move on. His instruction here about not accusing an elder, never to receive an accusation against an elder unless, there is an exception? Oh, yes, unless there are two or three witnesses. You can't go with hearsay, some disgruntled person. Hearsay won't do it. Someone must have seen it, some two or three someones, just to be sure. Now, we've got hundreds of people throughout the nation have witnessed the wrongdoings, not just in this place that I know of, but places all over. Hundreds of people have seen it. as I told you, there are 50 of them giving their testimony on one popular site. Others are scattered over the web. We've met the quota. 2 or 3 witnesses, plus hundreds. The entire passage in 1 Timothy from verses 17 to 22 is about church eldership. Paul goes on to say that those elders who turn out to be in error need to be rebuked before the congregation by Timothy so that the congregation can fear, realizing that no one is above the law of God. I've already indicted myself in a past post. I'll do it again in more detail another time. I've suggested that some of my listeners need to judge themselves too. And let's include in this indictment institutions like the ones in question in various states where such abuse is not monitored. But none of that clears me or anyone aware of these sad events from allowing these people to bring forth their clear and painful memories of their incarceration. We want to hear your stories, ladies and gentlemen in the other homes. We want to hear your stories. What I did was I've combined all the experiences that I could find about pain regarding these students. And I've combined them all into one composite person, one picture of suffering. I've then taken all their charges and placed them into categories. So no names will be mentioned. I scrambled the events. I don't want people's names to come out of this. No attempt is made to identify an individual, as you can find, though, on these other sites. A relatively simple search online will give you their names, their ages, the dates of everything. That's not my thing here. I want to give you a picture of what's going on there. The evidence is available to anybody that's really caring about this enough to check it out. And I hope that I'm triggering someone to go deeper and to do something that's in your power to do. For now, if you can, and maybe you should take this a little at a time, just read and listen to me. The statements, and there'll be like 300 statements, not 300 persons, but those 50 persons that I found with all their different statements coming to about 300 statements of suffering that I will produce in posts to come. And they come from not just the disgruntled, not just the unbelieving, because those are all mixed in there too, but there were true believers who are saying the same thing. They saw it with their own eyes. And they want you to know about it. The cries I will document represent approximately 50 persons aged 12 to 18. They testify of facts that happened in the years from 1980 to well into our century. You count these and the ones who came before and after them, there's at least 250 from this one site alone, or so they tell me. Those are the vocal ones. How many wish to remain silent? We do not know. Let me give a further explanation of the way I put all this together. I didn't repeat some offenses the entire number of times. Some of these offenses are mentioned by every girl. I didn't repeat it each time. You just have to, in your mind, repeat it. I've grouped them by type of offense. Just written one item after another from several different residents in one paragraph. But every statement is from a past resident. You can believe or not believe, but you got to listen. See if you don't come to the same conclusion that I did. There's absolutely nothing fictitious about this listing. Every allegation is from a real person that could have been your child or friend or fellow church member. And understand that they're not calling for your judgment, not one of them. They're calling for your assistance in helping future troubled ones. Another caution, don't read these or listen to these hundreds of allegations all at one time. You'll experience grief beyond what you can imagine or handle. Unless for some reason you've heard much of this before, But don't say I didn't warn you. Now I'm going on to May 22nd. We have a little extra time here. I call the May 22nd post "Stop Beating Me." We're not going to give actual allegations. It's still introduction. And then the next time we come together, we'll start the actual allegations. Before I share the first of the cries and the screams issuing from teen gulag homes, namely excessive physical punishment, that's the first one. Three things I want to say. When the laws changed, those people at the homes told us that corporal punishment stopped. Reports that come out, however, say that this was not always the case. Though the practices may have stopped from legal or financial pressure or whatever, the emotional pain that these things caused lingers on. The grown men and women today, the victims, they want to hear some confessions of wrongdoing. Not to bring someone to court, but so that the past resident's forgiveness will be meaningful. Recall from what I just said that all of these things didn't happen to one person, but that every statement made is a literal quote from someone that lived at a Beulah Land style home at one time or another. This is a collective cry. Now, what follows is horrific. Should never have happened. And I'm not alone in pointing all of these things out. Do the Google thing. Look up victims of Christian homes. Try that one. Or try teen gulag or church-related abuse. You'll eventually be led all over the web and start wondering, where have I been? How could I not have known about all this? Why didn't my church leaders make me aware of it so I could at least pray? Those are some of the things that I was thinking anyway. Unfortunately, those searches will make you run across the ungodly, not Christian at all, even unscrupulous, total thieves. Many of these people hate Jesus Christ and his church, and they're looking for dirt. But one must consider this. If the ungodly, the people of this world, people who are not bound for heaven, if they think that these abuses are outrageous, why don't God's people look at the same thing and believe that? Why is there not a collective shout to address the collective cry of the abused from the church? And so next time we start that first category, excessive physical punishment. Now, program note, for those in real time, thank you. You've been with me for 7 days straight. My goodness, that's a good thing. I appreciate it. However, I'm going to give you a break. We're going to take the weekend off, Saturday, Sunday. It is Friday today, the 10th of January, 2020. Monday, we will rejoin this search and this broadcast of information that hopefully will become a prayer target of yours as you continue with me. I've got a lot of other great things on this site. I hope you'll go looking for them. Just browse my site for a while. I think you'll be surprised at all the things that are there. And don't forget to check out the new books, Book of Romans, 2-volume set there, but there's other books there that some of you have never heard about. Go for it. And I think that's all we'll do today. This is the Hackberry House of Chosun. Lord willing, we get to talk again real soon. Bye-bye.